Before we begin, everyone do me a favor. Thanks. Read a little thing I wrote called The Federalist Papers. Yeah. I explain how a nation's unlikely to survive without a strong central government to keep it alive. When I launched a central bank, Jefferson called me ill. Now you have my faith to thank on every $10 bill. When America was cash-strapped, I pushed past that. Now some sicko makes crypto, and our nation backtracks.
Decentralized currency, yes, I invented it. I'm sure many governments wish they had prevented it. The national cash is how they keep control. But freedom to the people was my ultimate goal. Am I a synonym? A group of men? It doesn't even matter. I invented Bitcoin because fiat is a disaster. A man from Japan over a damn hologram. I'm the reason open season on crypto began.
Welcome to Tokens Radio Show. It's Sunday, April the 14th. My name's Christy.
I'm Linda.
I'm Peter.
I'm Faisal Ode.
I'm Elizabeth.
Great. Good to be here. We're broadcasting live from the studios of KCNR in Redding, California on both 96.5 FM and 1460 AM. You can stream us online at KCNR1460.com to catch today's show and access our past shows. Follow us on Telegram and X for updates at Tokens Radio Show. And we have our talented producer, Christina, working the booth, and she's behind the scenes out there waving at us and saying, hey, let me talk.
Good afternoon, Christina.
All right. Well, she's mic-less right now, but she's here. Thank you so much. And we have a special guest here today, Faisal, and we're going to introduce him in just a moment. But before we begin our chat, let's get a market update. Currently, Bitcoin is at 64,100. IBIT ETF shares, I should say, is 38.18. Ethereum's at 3,073. XRP is 49 cents. And XLM is 10 cents.
Yeah, you have to clarify that because, I mean, you go from 3,000 to 0.49, you know.
And the market really took a tumble, didn't it? Does it have to do with the auction?
Yeah, there's a lot of things.
Have to do with current events in the world.
Factors.
So a lot of factors going on here.
But the roller coaster is going to go back up here shortly. Right. I'm just saying. No financial advice, but I think the coaster is going upwards.
But don't, no worries. We're going to be talking about Bitcoin here. So hold your seats and we'll
be
right there. You have a message for us, right?
Yeah, I do. Today's show is sponsored by the Queen of Dragons, home to Pinnacle Cultivators. Their carefully cultivated, unique strands offer elevated experience with exotic genetics and robust flavors. The Queen of Dragons is known for fair pricing, stringent quality control, and knowledgeable staff. Stay connected by following at Queen Dragons on X or calling 530-276-9771.
They're good people.
They are good people over there.
They're very helpful. Well, we have a special guest, and Elizabeth, would you like to introduce Faisal?
Yes, so today our special guest is Faisal Ode. He's a nuclear engineer with in-depth understanding of energy systems and economics. I actually met him 2 years ago at Pacific Bitcoin and was really impressed at his ability to recognize the potential for Bitcoin mining to promote sustainability, grid stability, by the using of stranded energy sources. And during our chat, he'll explain how well-designed mining operations can effectively harness diverse stranded energy, such as flared gas, remote hydroelectric power, and curtailed renewables. And lastly, we'll kind of just pick his brain and see what he thinks is the future of renewable energy and Bitcoin mining.
Oh, wow. That's quite an introduction.
Stay tuned.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Welcome.
How are you?
We are in a special company here, so this is great. I'm looking
this
forward to
this is
going to
be interesting, yeah.
So, folks, if you would like to join us in our discussion, give the station a call at 530-605-4567 or hit us up in the chat at KCNR1460.com. And Christina will monitor that chat for us. And let's go ahead and let's begin.
So. Yeah, where do we want to start with, Faisal? Do you want to give us a little bit of background or something, you
please.
Know?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
My name is Faisal Ode, and so originally from the Middle East. I was born in the United Arab Emirates. Family-wise, is from the Holy Land, Palestine, Israel, Jordan area, and lived 17 years in the United Arab Emirates, did my schooling, finished high school, and then I came to the United States. I came to Indiana. I did my nuclear engineering bachelor's and master's at Purdue University. And then I went to the nuclear industry to start working. I did have opportunities to go back to the Middle East and work over there. They had nuclear power plant being built in Abu Dhabi, literally 10 miles from where I lived. Great pay. They were going to pay me a lot more than what I was making. But I rejected all offers to go back for various reasons. But primarily, the governance and systems in Middle East is quite different than the United States.
Oh, I bet it is.
Correct. Until recently, because the United States is also taking its own U-turn. But I stayed here, did nuclear engineering for the last 10 years, and found Bitcoin 3-4 years ago. And was an interesting journey compiling the understanding of energies, resources, the electricity grid, the dynamic movement of supply and demand, and the kind of pressure it's been putting onto our grids lately, and how Bitcoin mining has a role to play in that suppression of all the variability in power.
Interesting. So when you say that, it just brings to mind, you know, we always hear how bad Bitcoin is going to be for the grid. And, you know, our grid is already overloaded. And if we do Bitcoin mining, then it's going to, like, blow up or crash or something.
It's going to boil the oceans.
Yeah. So can you touch upon that? Because you hit on it when you were saying all that. And, again, people, I think the information that they get is misinformation. They don't understand. And that's what we're trying to do, is educate the people about the grid and Bitcoin mining. So,
I mean, it's quite difficult. Where do you start from when people kind of have that kind of misinformation, you know, thinking that, you know, use of energy is a bad thing? I mean, you could start asking the question, first of all, who is it to decide who uses energy, what and when and how much? So that's always an interesting question to ask. And second of all, who's to say the use of energy is bad? I mean, I can't tell you how many times you could use your washer or dryer, even though it's a kilowatt machine and it consumes a lot of power. But I can't tell you how much to use of that.
You know, the countries in this world that have the highest standard of living have the highest energy consumption. So there's a direct correlation there between energy consumption and standard of living, quality of life.
Yeah. So, but at first it was just asking the question on who is it to decide who to use the energy or not. So going beyond that, yeah, use of energy has always been a positive thing, a net benefit. It's over time you've noticed people being freed up to do more creative thinking, inventions, finding solutions and technologies as a consequence of having more energy at their disposal. Whether that energy goes into a dishwasher that frees up a human from spending an hour and a half each day washing dishes, simple mundane things we don't really think about, but it frees us up. So use of energy in of itself is not, there's nothing intrinsically bad about it. So to say that we're going to break the grid for using energy, it's misinformation. But it does pose a greater question as then, well, what's wrong with the grid? Why are people worried about the grid?
Of it being overloaded is one of their way they look at it, is it's so many people are on the infrastructure now that it wasn't built to support that.
Maybe we need to improve the infrastructure.
Right. What?
Yeah. there's an infrastructure. I mean, the best analogy would be California.
Right. Yeah. Can you go into that for like 30 seconds?
I mean, let's go. 1970s, California's population was something about 17, 18 million people. At that time, we decided, out of environmental energy alarmists, they said, you know, no more development. We're just going to go into a mode of maintenance at best.
Right.
Just maintain what we have. Well, California's population has doubled since then. Not a single road was built.
No.
The I-5 is exactly the same.
Yes.
99. They're all the exact same. Wow. We have twice the population.
Yeah.
So we are stressing our infrastructure. We're
yes,
not growing
are.
With it.
Right.
So they do have a reason behind being worried about the grid. Not necessarily Bitcoin is creating that problem.
Correct. Yeah.
It has to be the sacrificial lamb.
Yes. Yes.
Right. That's right. So, and maybe because it represents freedom in some sort of way.
Oh.
Well, again, I think it's the information that's being put out there in regards to Bitcoin and anything like that is a lot of the masses. Let me back up. Some of the people don't realize what Bitcoin is.
Yeah.
And that's the unknown part that makes it. Their fear of it. So if I don't know the answers to the question, of course it's going to be bad, or I'm going to be reserved on that.
Yeah. Well, if somebody was to ask you about Bitcoin, what is it? I mean, what would you say?
Yeah, that's a very good question. And, you know, there's been thousands of podcasts.
Yes.
Right. But we want
all
you
to answer that question.
But you know what's really cool? A lot of our audience are not on podcasts. Right. Our demographics are an older demographic, and we're trying to reach those people. They're very interested, but they just don't know where to go, and you're not going to have them ringing up the radio station because they're uncomfortable with the question they want to ask. So,
I'm sorry, but they're afraid that Aunt Martha might hear them on the radio.
Yeah,
so
they might feel as though it's a silly question, which questions are silly at all. We want to hear those questions. You know,
I'd like to take a run at answering your question, Christy. What is Bitcoin? I would answer that Bitcoin is the hardest money in the history of human civilization.
Mic drop.
Let's see, I sometimes try to explain certain things with analogy.
Sure.
They help us provide a framework of thinking, especially when trying to explain something that's, what they call it, paradigm. It's a new paradigm shift.
Right.
You know, during Kodak, when they had the analog films, one of their engineers proposed the digital films, and the CEO pretty much rebuked him. He's like, what are you talking about? You're silly.
Oh, yeah.
And Kodak doesn't exist today. So it's a new paradigm. Bitcoin, in that sense, is analogous to gold. In the sense that gold had that intrinsic property of being de facto money. The reason it was de facto money, I mean, it wasn't decreed by anybody that you shall use Bitcoin, you shall use gold because it's money. By default, people went to it because it had certain properties within it that can be so-called money.
Scarcity chief amongst them.
Scarcity being amongst them, correct. So it had that property and you couldn't inflate it. You couldn't print more of it. People knew who were trading between, let's say, 2,000 years ago, Marco Polo and in China, they meet each other. They're strangers. They don't know who they are. Mm-hmm. But they could trust that if I give you a gold coin, that is, you've put the energy, the work to get that coin. So it was a mediator between them, and it was a trustful thing. So we did that. Now, you've seen a phase where we've been going all digital in certain things. Music has become digital.
Right.
You know, internet communication has become digital. So we've digitized many things.
Right.
One thing we haven't digitized is money.
Right.
And Bitcoin seems to have done that, but it's very hard to believe it. It's almost too good to be true at first glance. Mm-hmm. And that's why kind of people push it away and just not give it a second thought as to, is that really happening?
But we do live in a digital world, and our money is digitized, but people don't realize that it is. When you use your debit card, you are accessing digital money, but the way it looks and it feels to us is that we're using a piece of plastic, and it's going to communicate with the bank that's going to go and send the money where it needs to go. But that is already a digital transaction.
Yeah, and one thing that I've heard said that really always made me think is our money pretty much already is digital.
Right.
There's just one bug, and that's cash.
Cash, doggone it, gets in the way.
People trying to increase, but really, if you look at everything, it is.
But we
more
still
than
have
it,
you know, a physical piece of paper.
Mm-hmm. The bug. Yeah.
Yeah, we still have that. Yeah.
Well, that's that paradigm.
Yeah,
that
Russell
is talking about. It's what we're used to.
That's correct. And part of what we're used to is things that are related to our senses. So if you could physically see it, touch it,
feel it
makes it real.
Right.
There's some truth to it, but I don't think that's really the ultimate truth. If you can't see a thing, doesn't mean it doesn't exist. So you cannot use that counter-argument that it's not real. So that's the challenge with digital things that are digital, that are no longer real. It's just a different sensory mode in that sense. So you can touch a piece of cash, but digital currency, you can't touch it. So that's where skepticism kind of comes in. It's like it's not real.
Yeah.
But I would say that's not true.
I would say that it is real when you have lost it.
Yeah.
Right. Yes, Once you've lost it, it becomes real to you. So that might be the notion where we often talk about your crypto hygiene, keeping it safe, you know, good practices, very much like you would protect your account numbers, your social security number, and things like that. I mean, so if you lost it, it would feel real to you.
But then again, I have to say something is the money that we're talking about, the paper money is not currency, and that's what a lot of people don't realize, like with Bitcoin. It's actually a currency, not a paper. It has value. The money that we so-called the currency, you know, is not, it has no value that we use, whether we use the plastic or we use the paper.
And generating our currency takes a lot of energy. I read somewhere along the line that the production of our fiat currency takes more energy than it does in Bitcoin.
Wow. I won't be surprised. I don't know that a specific fact, but I won't be surprised, especially minting all the coins.
Right. Yep. And the coins, I would argue, have more value than the paper that represents our current, the denomination on that currency.
Yeah, because you could melt them down or whatever, probably.
Well, sure, but it's also in our Constitution that you will have a coin. You will have coinage.
Coin money. Yeah.
Not fiat currency. Mm-hmm. But that's a whole other discussion.
And see, if you think about it, I mean, money in of itself is like an abstract concept. You know, it's a it came out of some, you know, creative thinkers thousands of years ago. You know, God bless them, because they thought of a way of this abstract concept is going to help people come together and cooperate and grow, because part of civilization is coming together and then growing and sharing prosperity with each other. Otherwise, we go back to tribalism, which is the normal mode of you know, our ancestry, tribalistic hunter gatherers. So money, that idea in of itself, was beneficial. The next question that came is then, what is that tool that manifests as money that we're going to use? Because now you have it in theory, you have it in concept, but now you need something in practice to use it.
Right.
And we went through many iterations of money as
It's not convenient to haul around your gold or silver. It's not safe. But, you know, Bitcoin has always, most people think of it as a digital currency, but it's more than that. A peer-to-peer cash system, but it is far more greater than that. I mean, the Bitcoin blockchain, that represents, you know, security, almost like triple entry bookkeeping, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And it's worldwide. Everybody has the same copy of the blockchain.
Yeah.
Peter?
It's the most secure computer network in the history of humankind.
Yes.
That is what Bitcoin is, in addition to being the hardest money.
But and a Satoshi here is a Satoshi in Africa.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead. To Faisal's point is that we're coming together, and so we don't have to have these currency exchanges, if you will. The reason why we have them at this point is because we're not ready for that conversion where you can go buy a cup of coffee for 20 Satoshis. But if you want to buy used Satoshis, you do have to convert it in some sort of on-ramp or off-ramp vehicle that makes it into our currency, our form of exchange.
And you do mention the ledger and the triple bookkeeping accounting method.
Right.
Well, I don't know too much about accounting. I do understand that there's a benefit in that.
Right.
We talk about accountability. Of course, we live in a time where pretty much there's a certain group of people in this world that feel that they're unaccountable to whatever decisions they make. Okay.
Yeah.
So in that sense, I mean, it brings back this whole notion of accountability. You know, people have skin in the game. People are subject to consequences of their actions. It's a dictum that has lasted so long that now we're straying away from it. So there's a benefit in that sense. If you look at the Federal Reserve, since its establishment 100 years ago, it hasn't been audited once.
Of course
and
not.
And the Bitcoin network, the ledger, is audited every 10 minutes.
That's right.
Yeah.
You know, have you ever had the opportunity to go to a Fed window and cash a check?
Nope.
No, I don't know anybody who can do that either.
And really?
Just how difficult it is to be close to our central banking system, which is supposed to be, you know, the banking system for the people. But is it really? I mean,
well, we know
without
answer.
Going conspiracy, but it is a known fact that, you know, they are their own entity. They're not even part of our government.
No,
you don't have to go to conspiracy. It's simply as
they
just feel like they know better than everybody else, and they're central planners. They feel like they can dictate how people should live. They know better.
Right.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
What I was going to say earlier too is what is one thing that everybody says, whether you're in Africa or you're in the United States or wherever you are, what is the one thing that they say about Bitcoin, what it is?
Freedom.
It's freedom.
Especially Africans.
Yes.
Yes.
I would encourage anybody and everybody to read the very old book, The Creature from Jekyll Island. Please.
Mandatory reading.
Must read this book.
You can even find it on YouTube.
On audio?
Yeah, yes, you can find,
really?
Yes,
G. Edward Griffin.
Yes. Yeah. Thank you for that. Yes, there are, it's broken into two videos, and you can watch his presentation about the Jekyll Island.
Oh, that's fantastic. I'm going to go watch the video version
tonight. I believe it's something like 2 hours or something like that.
I can't wait.
Yeah, so, yeah, it's definitely mandatory. Well, not really, but it's to your interest to go and do that.
And then to go ahead and go more on that, you know, one thing about Bitcoin versus a lot of other things is it doesn't matter who you are, what you are, where you're from, what your political view is or any of that has nothing to do with what you can hold or how much you can hold.
Right.
Yeah. The great equalizer.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. off air, we were talking about the various iterations of digital money and just a history lesson. They have attempted digital money since the 70s. There's been different unused technologies that came out of DARPA and the military that was this application starting with cryptography.
Mm-hmm.
And long story short, why they all failed is one key element, and it was centralization.
Yes.
A central authority.
Yes.
That's why they never worked. And so Peter would, and all of us were talking about this, is that, well, what was the one thing that made it different was decentralization. Now, that's where Satoshi and his team, presumably there's more than one person who created Bitcoin, took it that way. And using all of the latest military applications that were no longer required or used in the military, like SHA-256, yeah. You know, TCP/IP, you know, the GPS system, you know, all of those technologies. And then the one change element was decentralization and never having an authority, you know, to monitor it and govern over it.
Which was the same principle that the military baked into DARPA, the predecessor of the Internet, the decentralization. In case an enemy missile attacked one part of the country, they wanted the whole network to just be up and running still.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yes.
And if you look at it historically, just going back to the importance of decentralized money, historically we've been going through cycles. Different civilizations go through cycles from having taste and propensity towards accumulating decentralized money, whether it was in the form of gold, silver, whatever it was at that time. And then over time, they switched to fiat money. Mm-hmm. And they keep going in cycle, if you look at it.
Right.
It's cyclical.
It is.
Different times, different conditions, different set of core values and system of governance that finds both of them appealing at different times.
Right.
And clearly, if you look at the last 60, 70 years, we've done our fair share of playing with fiat money.
Oh, big time.
It seems like now it's switching towards decentralized money.
Right.
And the question is now, what is that manifestation of decentralized money? Because you could say, I'll go back to gold, but not now. Here's where the time of, okay, there must be something new.
Right.
In terms
something
of,
that's portable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Divisible.
And I do think that the Internet is... Are we ready to go for a break?
Yeah.
Okay.
We're having so much fun.
All right. Well, we'll come back. And
We will continue this conversation on the other side. You're listening to Tokens Radio Show here on KCNR, 1460 AM and 96.5 FM.
Your talk radio.
your friends, neighbors, and
experience luxurious bliss with Pinnacle Cultivators, Redding's premier licensed legacy cultivator, exclusively at the Queen of Dragons in the city of Shasta Lake. Pinnacle's carefully crafted, expertly curated flower guarantees an exceptional experience with rare genetics and distinctive flavors, freshly packaged daily for a genuine farm-to-table experience. Visit 5044 Shasta Dam Boulevard or call 530-276-9771 for delivery and hours of operation. Visit queenofdragons.com or follow us on X at the Queen Dragons.
Hi, Bob the Drop here. The other day I had a close encounter with my friends from Mars. I visited them a few years back and they discovered the great taste of Mount Shasta spring water. Well, I guess they ran out, so they came back to Earth to get some more. I reminded them it comes from a protected spring at the base of Mount Shasta and it's bottled at the source. I guess they just didn't get the part about us delivering right to your door. Have your own close encounter by calling 1-800-922-6227 to get some of the best tasting water in the galaxy. Pure and simple, naturally, the best. Mount Shasta spring water.
The property insurance crisis in California is starting to affect the business insurance property also. 200 to 300% rate increases in business property rates or not writing business insurance at all are becoming the norm. At Siskiyou Insurance, we have over 100 years experience in writing business insurance in the North State. We can help. We live here and care about our community and want to make sure that you keep your business with a local agent that knows our town and supports it every day. And we'll get you the best deal we can. Call Curtis Byron at Siskiyou Insurance Services, 530-224-2345 or 1-800-773-2345. Siskiyou Insurance, 530-224-2345 or 1-800-773-2345.
Good day. Welcome to this week's Town Hall News Brief. I'm Phoebe Johnson, your host, here with the latest local update. In the latest development involving Mayor Powell's situation, the missing 1968 Chevelle has been delivered to the home of a family member in another county. According to the family member, the delivery of the vehicle was unexpected, and it arrived in a deteriorated condition. The absence of proper registration and ownership documents has raised doubts about Mayor Powell's adherence to the court order. The court documents had explicitly instructed Powell to return the car in the same condition as when she had her father, who was suffering from advanced dementia, to transfer the title to her. Since the delivery of the car, the family has not received any communication from Mayor Powell. As a result, the family is contemplating additional legal action to ensure complete compliance with the court's order and to facilitate the settlement of the estate. Up next, the Drug Enforcement Administration, DEA, has called for the reclassification of cannabis from Schedule 1 to Schedule 3. This decision follows a recommendation from the Department of Health and Human Services 8 months prior. The Biden administration initiated the review in October 2022, marking the first time a president has requested such an action. The rescheduling proposal will undergo a formal rulemaking process, including public comments and potential judicial review. While significant, rescheduling to Schedule 3 fails to address the conflict adequately between federal and state cannabis policies. This marks the fifth time a cannabis rescheduling petition has been decided by the DEA, with the agency rejecting a similar petition in 2016. Once finalized, the changes in marijuana's federal status will take effect 30 days after publication in the Federal Register. On the possible precipice of rescheduling, Hayward, California has adopted Ordinance Number 23-02, tightening regulations on commercial cannabis businesses. The ordinance introduces application fees and strict enforcement measures to keep cannabis operators in check. Violators will face a range of penalties, including administrative fines, misdemeanor charges, and civil penalties sought by the city attorney, with fines ranging from $5,000 to $15,000 per day for each violation. Illegal cannabis cultivation will be met with steep fines, $1,000 per plant for a first offense, $2,500 per plant for a second violation within 2 years, and $5,000 per plant for a third violation within the same time frame. Property owners and tenants will be held liable for any penalties incurred. As Hayward takes a firm stance on cannabis regulation, the future of commercial cannabis trade in the state remains uncertain. On a lighter note, residents of the Redding area can look forward to a day of fun and bargains at the upcoming 46 Wooded Acres big event. Get ready for an unforgettable day of treasure hunting and bargain bonanza at the 46 Wooded
Hollywood Acres big event on Saturday, May 11th. This annual neighborhood garage sale extravaganza has grown from a humble gathering of a dozen homes to a massive event featuring over 90 homes eager to sell their wares. Embark on a thrilling journey through the Wooded Acres neighborhood, including Anderson Oaks, Aldea Robles, Wooded Acres North, Fiesta Way, Robles North, and Meadowview. The wheeling and dealing commences at 8 a.m., rain or shine, so come prepared for a full day of fantastic finds and unbeatable deals. From Reading, take Airport Road south to Meadowview Drive, turn right, and follow the signs. From Anderson, take Airport Road north to Turn Creek Road, turn left, and turn right on Riata Drive. Take advantage of this exciting neighborhood celebration with 46 years of tradition and countless treasures waiting to be discovered. Thank you for listening to your Town Hall Brief. Become part of the conversation at Shasta Lake Town Hall on Facebook or at Town Hall News on X, formerly Twitter.
All right, and we're back. I mean, before we took the break, guys, didn't that go really quick? A lot of information.
Flew by.
Yeah, and we got to move along here.
Great conversation.
Yeah, it was. If you want to call in, the number here is 530-605-4567. And otherwise, you can say something in the chat room or just listen to us, and hopefully we'll go over enough more information to answer some of the questions you might have in regards to what we're trying to accomplish here in education and in the North State with Bitcoin.
Yeah. Feel free to call in.
Yeah.
There is no question that is not a good question. They're all good questions.
Yeah. And we're all at different levels. That's what's really cool right. about this. So what do we want to hit up upon maybe our resources here in the North State?
I think we ought to shift to the notion of the possibility of Bitcoin mining and the utilization of our rich resources here.
Okay.
Yeah. And
Faisal?
Yeah, what do you think about that? I mean, look at all what we have. We have hydro. We have natural gas coming through here. Solar. We have wind. Biomass. I mean, there's a lot of work going on with biomass.
Exactly right. And the recent trend is, you know, you've got to put more renewable energy on the grid.
Right.
You know, solar and wind specifically.
Right.
They've been subsidized. Well, look at the bright side. Reading is the second sunniest
It is.
Town in the United States, you know, apart from another town in Arizona, Yuma maybe.
Right.
Yeah.
Wow.
You get 320 days of just bright skies out of 365.
Yeah. Faisal, you're a nuclear engineer. Tell us about nuclear energy and Bitcoin.
Well, it doesn't work here in California. You see them destroying all nuclear power plants in California.
Right. Yes.
So that's a different topic. We could talk about it at a different time, just because there's a lot of hurdles to go over.
Sure.
You
know,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Be aware of the fact that, you know, nuclear doesn't have the strong proponents of it today.
Right.
I'm a proponent, of course, but it's a challenge here in California. So renewable is one of them.
Right.
You got plenty of sun, abundance of sun here. So it's the best place to, you know, have a lot of solar panels. Same thing with water. We've built the largest, you know, waterway system in Central Valley.
Right.
The reservoirs, the dams.
Right.
I mean, it's the most.
The delta.
The delta is the most sophisticated aqueduct water system probably in the world. We built that over, you know, a 60, 70-year period from the late 1800s up until 1970s. And, again, that's also when we stopped building new reservoirs, new dams,
right.
New irrigation systems.
Mm-hmm.
But, nevertheless, we still have a lot of water here.
Right.
And the combination of hydropower and solar both have a similarity in the sense that they're very intermittent. They're not steady sources of power. You don't get them 24/7 at a fixed base load all day, all night.
Mm-hmm.
So they go up and down. And that's where the challenges come to the grid. If you simplify this observation, use this model where you have a consumer in electrical engineering, they talk about that as the load, and then you've got the supplier, which is the generator.
Right.
So just a simple model. You've got a generator, and then you've got a consumer, the load. Generally speaking, sources of energy, the generation used to try to match what the demand is. So when we see human behaviors where they have high demand between 6 p.m. and 9 p.m., you know, when families are back home, washing, you know, making food, we adjusted our sources of energy to match the demand.
Okay. Right.
Today, we reversed it. Mm-hmm. We started putting more generating sources of generation that are intermittent, and now we're asking the people, the consumer, to try to fit that.
Okay.
So they're saying, okay, please do not charge your car between 8 p.m. and 10 p.m.
Right.
Try to charge it during daytime. Well, guess what? I'm driving at daytime.
Exactly. Or I'm at work.
Yeah.
Right.
So that's really what we talk about. We're stressing our grid.
Yes.
It's because we flipped that game. Where the customer is supposed to be king, you know, famous statement, you know, so the supplier is trying to match what the customer wants. We're flipping it today. Now we're introducing a lot of sources of energy that are intermittent, and we have no way of modulating that energy that we're now literally asking human behaviors to change. Do not charge your car. Do not wash your dishes. You know, do not do your laundry at specific times.
Interesting way to put it.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, because you don't look at it that way.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, in a consensual, democratic nation, there's going to be a lot of pushback.
Sure.
If you were in China, it's easy. You shove it down their throat.
Right. You don't have a choice. They have no freedom.
Correct. So instead of doing what the customer wants, now we're flipping it. So now the question becomes, how do we go back to that?
Mm-hmm. Right.
And that's where Bitcoin mining comes in.
Yeah, that's actually what I was just going to say. You can talk about how Bitcoin mining can promote grid stability.
So now you have sources of energy that are intermittent. So we talked about solar comes at daytime. Wind comes at nighttime. You might not have those demand to, you know, absorb that sources of energy. What do you do with it? I mean, you either dump them into the ground. There's many ways to just waste it.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. And here's where Bitcoin mining comes in. It's a source. It's a load. So it's a consumer of energy, but it doesn't have human emotions and behavior. So you could turn it on and off whenever you want, and it's not gonna tell you that it doesn't like that. So you could use that Bitcoin mining as a way to regulate excesses of energy, or you know, surplus, or having a you know a lack of source of energy by turning it on and off.
All right, let me stop you right there and just reflect back what I thought I heard you say. So you build this energy source, say a bunch of windmills as an example, and it costs you a fixed amount of money. But the way that energy distribution works currently, a certain amount of that energy has to be wasted, has to be. And it could be used, and it could be sold if you could find the right flexible buyer.
That's correct.
So you're just ceasing and desisting flushing money down the toilet is what you're saying.
Pretty much.
Okay, just clarifying.
Yeah, that's a fair statement.
Yeah, there you go.
So now you need a way to be able to absorb that excess energy. And not only do you have a mechanism to absorb that excess energy, but it's also a revenue-generating device.
Right.
It's mining Bitcoin, analogous to gold. It's mining gold in digital space.
Right.
But it's still tethered to physical reality because it needs energy.
Right.
So that's where it comes in and starts to fill in the gap without having to ask the customers to change their behaviors. Now, as I said, with solar, for example, we're blessed here with a lot of sun. So you could do a cost-benefit analysis on what's the price of electricity here, you know, to be able to make a Bitcoin mining profitable.
Right.
We know we have a Bitcoin halving coming soon, so it's going to stress.
Very soon.
A few days.
Yes.
Yeah.
But then on the other side, there's also transaction fees, you know, that that the Bitcoin network collects to maintain the network.
So typically they present just simple numbers for what makes a profitable Bitcoin mining operation is through a normalized price of electricity units of cents per kilowatt hour. How much are you paying for electricity per unit energy? And paying for that electricity is usually the majority of the cost of a Bitcoin mining operation.
Sure.
They have other costs, of course, such as leasing the warehouse and the equipment.
Right.
But it's mainly that source of energy. And we have Bitcoin miners like the S19 or S21, you could do the math and look at what price of electricity does this mining operation become profitable.
Right.
And what we've seen lately is that there have always been improvements in these miners such that they've always become more and more efficient, and therefore cheaper and cheaper electricity can become more and more profitable. So let's give a rule of thumb. Today, an S19 miner would need a source of electricity that is somewhere on the order of 15 cents a kilowatt hour.
Okay.
So if you put a 15 cents per kilowatt hour into an S19 Bitcoin miner, you break even.
Okay.
If you can acquire electricity at a cheaper price than that, you're making profit.
Okay. Wow.
But you look at the advanced one, S21, the more recent one, those could do it at half the price. So 30 cents a kilowatt hour is what they would need to break even. So if they're having much cheaper electricity than 30 cents a kilowatt hour, which is easily here in Reading, you can find that.
Right.
Mm-hmm. The profit margins are very huge. Mm. There's an incentive to actually put Bitcoin miners there to capture that, that revenue stream.
So Bitcoin miners would also be able to continue working on being maybe the buyer of last resort. So when that stranded energy or that energy that's going to go away in the ethers, if that could be acquired by a Bitcoin miner, they can get a good price on it and utilize a resource that would be wasted, like what Peter was saying, right?
Bitcoin miners don't have to be on 24 hours.
That's right.
So they could be on at nighttime or daytime, depending on that.
To increase profitability, that would also be part of their operating procedures is to buy stranded energy.
And, of course, a supplier would love to sell their energy. I've never learned of a supplier who said, I don't want to sell my energy.
Take your money back.
Yeah, I don't want your money.
We don't need your capital
especially
for new infrastructure.
Especially if it's just going to get lost as it goes on down the line if it's not
it's
being
gone.
Utilized, right?
Yeah, it's gone.
Right.
It's almost like it's a match made in heaven.
It does seem that way. Some of the complaints, there was a couple questions off of a private conversation that we had not too long ago. It was a great question about, aren't those computers that are used for Bitcoin, can't they be used for something else? I mean, can they go ahead and figure out people's passwords and things like that? You know, just on the security side of things, I just want to, you know, maybe touch on that and love to have you maybe kind of answer that. I don't know if you remember how you answered that, but it was brilliant, you know, and that question that came up.
I do not remember exactly how I answered that. Yeah. Well, we'll try to do
it
again.
It was like, no.
Yeah. Well, it's like, no. Yeah, it's just they have the ASIC miners are solve algorithms, and that's what their job is.
Correct. That's what ASIC stands for, application-specific integrated circuits. So their niche focus is only doing specific calculation, SHA-256. They can't be used for anything else but that.
Right.
And it's a very it's not really a complicated algorithm. It's just there's a complexity in its randomness that it's hard to pick the needle out of a haystack. So you're trying to guess what that solution is when you're not given the input. So you're left with nothing but just trying, running this SHA-256 algorithm to try to guess what the answer is. And that's why there's nothing but just brute force. And it seems, you know, you're just doing trial and error, guessing numbers, doing math to try to figure out what the solution is.
Right. But they're not there trying to figure out passwords or figure out how to hack another system that's not on Bitcoin.
Well, it sounds like they don't have the capability.
No, they don't.
And people don't realize that. I think they think, a computer. You got a computer, it can do anything.
A supercomputer.
Yes, super computer.
And if you're concerned about your bank account password, just make them 14 characters long or more. You could do the math. It'll take billions of years to guess it.
Sure.
So, yeah, if you have a password that's 3 characters long, you'd want to change that.
I could see that.
Yeah.
So Bitcoin mining here in Shasta County could be a benefit with our rich resources like we've talked about. And it could also create perhaps a pathway for us to get out of the grant-seeking game, perhaps being that tier two income source to help shore up city and the county's treasuries, perhaps. How would that work?
Yeah, that's a good question. We've become so dependent on government these days for, you know, our living. So we always look for grants. The same thing in the nuclear industry.
Yeah.
If the government doesn't grant you, you're not going to do anything.
Right.
And that's where the opportunity comes with Bitcoin mining. You already have energy-generating assets, Shasta Lake Dam, the Keswick Dam. We have a lot of dams here.
Yes.
And they're generating hundreds of megawatts of power, solar as well. So you do have a lot of energy to sell, but there's not enough people to buy it for many reasons. And so why not capitalize on that excess energy with Bitcoin, which is, again, it's a form of money. So you're actually making money by just mining Bitcoin. So that then becomes a revenue generating for the municipality, the town, by however way they want to do it, whether it's taxing the operations or distribution. And
even partnering with a miner, for instance, to where maybe the Bitcoin miner might get a a great deal on land lease, for instance, or a warehouse or something like that, and have a partnership with the municipality to on the Bitcoin or the transaction fees, and that becomes beneficial to the citizens of the community.
I was going to say, let's see,
pave
to take
the
it
roads,
a little pave, further, yeah. It can go down to the community itself and the people within sight of the community that can definitely benefit from something like this.
It would be like an Alaska situation,
yeah.
with the oils, oil reserves, and how the Alaskan citizens were being paid a portion of those profits that were being made off of their natural resource. And that has helped out the Alaskan citizens mm-hmm. quite a bit. And it's
yeah.
interesting that they're now turning to Bitcoin, by the way, adding that as another income stream for them. Partially because of the oil lease issues that are going on right now.
And we've talked about, I think it was Florida actually gives
right.
back to the people in the community.
Yeah, they get a little bit of a residual income.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
people go far places to, you know, extract energy, right?
Yes, they do.
And we do that so we could supply, you know, energy for our own consumption, which
correct.
Is part of our growth.
Right.
Well, I think earlier you mentioned something, and I think if more people realized what you had said about the energy and consumption and how it got how it's reversed now, you know, they make it sound like, oh, the reason that we have so much problem is because you're using too much electricity, when that isn't the case at all. And if they can realize that, then they can see a lot of potential going on. Because the way he put it, I didn't look at it that way mm-hmm. until he said it, that it's reversed now. And that can make a big difference
for
people.
That was very insightful. That
yeah.
was the first time I ever thought about that. I bet
yeah.
a lot of people, I bet most of our listeners, same.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just the mind shift needed to see the opportunity.
Right.
Exactly.
You know, interesting, in the city of Shasta Lake, for instance, there's going to be a public discussion about increase of water rates.
Yes.
Now, the reason for that is to improve the infrastructure. Also, there's some shortfalls that they can see down the road mm-hmm. as far as what would be in their operating budget. So I can see here how Bitcoin can help that without having to go to the public and mm-hmm. impose a $7 million
higher
bond as one option, competing for a grant to help offset that bond so that they can build a raw storage tank. Okay, so, you know, this has to do with the wildfires that we've mm-hmm. had. Complicated situation. I mean, we need that storage, but yet this is one option. If they had considered to bring this into the fold, that can actually create revenues that can help offset mm-hmm. those costs and maybe not have to go seek a bond or taxing the people. I mean, it's going to be a significant increase. Mm-hmm. And for those who are already living on a lifeline scenario, it's very tight for them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and people want a one-tier system in this situation, but there's an argument with those who are on the lower end of the income spectrum. They want to have the multi-tiers, but it's not mm-hmm. fair. You know, the water is like gasoline. You know, it comes out of it's the same resource, right?
Right, and if you look at like
gasoline to you, gasoline to me.
Right,
yeah.
What PG&E and them are trying to do is go by your income mm-hmm. to determine
yeah.
what you should pay.
Right.
And that shakes up
yeah,
the whole system altogether. Like
yeah.
you say, my gas is the same as your gas.
Yeah, so we can harvest this energy and put it to work so that we don't have to have these other methods of continually taxing the citizens.
Yeah, isn't that what PG&E is trying to do with adjusting the price of electricity based on your income?
Yeah.
That's by
yes.
definition socialism. So
yeah.
yes.
if you
yes,
make more
is.
Money, if you make more income, and therefore you're a successful person, entity, business, you're productive, you make gains, you're going to be penalized and paying
yeah.
higher cost for electricity. But if you're bankrupt
and you're poor
and you're making bad decisions or your business endeavor is always falling down, well, you get to pay nothing. And in fact, you could use as much energy as you want.
Right.
So it's upside down.
Yes,
it is.
It most certainly is.
Yeah. Right.
It's kind of like the tax system.
Yeah.
I do taxes. So. That's kind of, you know, we have this discussion all the time. I do with people in my office. Well, why do I have to pay so much?
That's a progressive
I didn't make the
system.
Yeah. We'd be happy if it went away.
Imagine if you made a telephone call, and during that phone call, you made a $125,000 profit on a business deal. Then you get your phone bill at the end of the month, and it says $50,000 for that phone call. Well, and the reason was because you made $125,000 on that phone call. That is exactly how our taxation system works.
Right. Yep. We have a couple of minutes left. Faisal, is there some points that you'd like to add, make sure that our listeners get to hear before we sign off? Because this hour just kind of flew by.
Yeah, it went very fast. I've got my clock in front of me, and I...
And you'll come back, right?
Oh, we'd love to have you back.
I live in
Sorry,
town right
put
now.
You on a spot.
He'll be back.
I'll be back.
Right.
Let's see. So we talked about how we do have a lot of energy sources here in this town, mm-hmm. water and sun, mm-hmm. abundant of them. We're not talking about building new generating assets. Okay,
no.
That's different. We're trying to use existing assets.
No.
So why not use that excess energy to generate revenue? Now, there's a lack of understanding of what Bitcoin is. So that needs some education, which I think your show is doing that over here, trying to educate people about it. I think once they see that, I think it would take a miracle not to want to build a Bitcoin miner here in town. So there's a great opportunity over here, and I'm excited for you trying to, with the council members and,
Pioneer.
You know, try to,
well.
To get their interest and see,
right.
you know, if we could study this and
sure.
try to quantify the benefits.
A commission.
A commission.
Yes, we would love to get a commission together to study this together. You know.
And in essence, you're just trying to put numbers to it. So you're just trying to do the math and show them how this can be a thing that can
right.
generate revenue. Because at the end of the day, we could do the numbers and just show that
right.
this thing can work.
Right. Yeah. And I think the person we were speaking with before was saying, hey, as long as you're willing to pay, you know, X kilowatt per hour, mm-hmm. run your miners. But no, hopefully we were able to explain why that's not the case. There has to be a profitability involved here so that the operation can stay afloat, so that the income generation can continue and the reserves come in and all of those things that make a business work.
Well, a win-win for everyone.
A win-win for
yeah.
everyone. And,
mm-hmm.
and we've demonstrated that energy is not at that fixed unit. That fixed unit is assigned by that municipality. It's not it's not the fixed unit of cost for everybody. Okay, it's negotiable. And it's for sale. And
right.
if it's not going to be used and it's going to go away unused and be wasted, then that becomes a negotiable item and good for the miners and good for the municipality as well. They both
yeah,
win. It's a
win-win. For everybody. Yeah,
absolutely.
It's hard to find an angle that is hurtful for anybody.
It sure is.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And as far as, you know, talking about, you know, is it bad for the environment and all that? There are so many ways that we didn't get to discuss mm-hmm. today about harnessing, you know, some of, you know, maybe the heat that's generated and repurposing that and using it to warm buildings, that type of thing, or warm swimming pools, or what is it?
There's
hot tubs. Remember
hot tubs, yeah.
we talked about. I mean, it,
mm-hmm.
so and it just seems as though the Bitcoin mining operators in general know this, and so they're always innovating,
mm-hmm.
always innovating to come out with something that's much more environmentally friendly, other ways to use the excesses created by Bitcoin mining
mm-hmm.
To
mm-hmm.
repurpose that into something else so that it's green. It really is green.
Yeah, you're just scratching the surface.
Yes.
Yeah.
That was my normie explanation.
Yeah. And I think miners, too, something that I've really appreciated, seem like they're very keen on working with the public
yes.
sector as well.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We had two mining CEOs come on the show, and they both offered a helping hand.
Yeah.
Yes.
And they had two different, total
yeah,
different
sure
views
right.
of about how to do it, but both were very insightful and good.
Mm-hmm.
And they were
wanting to work together with counties,
yeah.
cities, and
yeah.
states. So.
And you know, there's one other thing. It may be in our national security interest
yes.
to mine Bitcoin.
Absolutely.
Just saying.
Yep.
Just saying.
No, I agree. Faisal, thank you so much for being here.
Yes, thank you for coming in.
Yes, great conversation.
And please come back.
Yes.
We got to have more conversations on this. And with that, I think we're at the end of the show, and we will see everybody next week. Take care.
We have 10 seconds. Here we
go. Oh.
Thanks a lot, everybody. We'll see you next week.
All right. Take care.
This world had never seen a Bitcoin as you're going into the old blockchain.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center. The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.